Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin. As a communicator, generative AI can be a useful tool, but like humans, it does have its imperfections. So relying solely on what comes out of its proverbial mouth can have consequences. Our guest today will help us navigate Gen AI's Achilles heels with some practical preventative prompts and review tactics. Joel Schwartzberg, a longtime communications coach, a speechwriter, and the author of Get to the Point, Simplify, Sharpen, and Sell Your Message, and The Language of Leadership, How to Engage and Inspire Your Team. Joel is a former U.S. national and state champion in collegiate public speaking and was inducted into the National Forensic Association Hall of Fame in 2002. Joel's insights on effective communication have been featured in many publications, including Harvard Business Review, Fast Company, CNBC, Newsweek, Inc.com, and he is also a regular contributor to the Toastmaster magazine. Joel's latest article, 7 Generative AI Pitfalls for Communicators, How to Spot and Resolve These Blind Spots Before They Cost You Clarity and Trust, appears in the March 2026 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Joel will also be presenting a learning session at the Toastmasters International Convention in August in Vancouver, Canada. Coming to us today from New Jersey, where he lives with his wife and rescue cats, Joel Schwartzberg, welcome back to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you, Greg. It's a pleasure to be here and a pleasure to be talking to the Toastmaster audience.
Well, that's awesome. Last year, I think we were on episode 268. Stop talking, start connecting, the cure for overspeaking. And I'll certainly put a link to that in the show notes. This time we're going to be talking about generative AI. And just to kick us off, Joel, as a professional communicator, what's your personal take on the use of generative AI?
Well, I didn't get a degree in AI, Greg, and I'm not even sure anyone can these days, or maybe they can. Most people learn about AI, at least most communicators, by just trying it and experimenting with it. So I've spent the last couple of years really kicking it around, ChatGPT, Gemini, Copilot, Perplexity, Claude, and seeing how it benefits me, because I really wanted to understand how you use it responsibly and how to use it irresponsibly, how people can tell you're using AI, and what recommendations for avoiding those tells you should yourself ignore, because it censors your own writing in a way that gets in the way of your own communication. Yeah. So really, it's by my using it, and Grammarly too, by using all these tools, realizing what it can do for me, practicing it, and also going on LinkedIn. You can throw a rock on LinkedIn and you'll find 30 people talking about what AI means and doesn't mean and what you should do and not do. So I've been consuming all of that and double checking and asking people. This article is really a compilation, and I'm quoting some other people who've done some thinking on this as well, but a compilation of the best of that intelligence on using AI responsibly, using it as a resource, not a replacement, so that it supports you and doesn't supplant you.
Yeah. I was curious, do you think AI is making people better communicators or just faster ones?
The thesaurus made us better communicators. Grammarly makes us better communicators. Spellcheck makes us better communicators. And AI can make us more efficient, more effective communicators. I use it all the time, and I'll tell you the truth. Even though I discard 50% of what it recommends, just like Grammarly, the other 50%, let's say 30 to 50%, actually makes my writing tighter, makes my organization more efficient, gives me a better idea or a more concise way of presenting my hook or my conclusion. So it's really, as long as I understand that I am the decider, as we used to hear. And I make these decisions once AI suggests them to me and puts them into a suggestion box. Then I find it really, really helpful. Originally, there are times when AI would put out an output and I'd be like, this looks good. And then I would put that out there, let's say on a LinkedIn post, and maybe do a little bit of tweaking. And when I looked at it the next day, I would think, wow, you know what? That's not me. I would make 15 to 20 more changes to this if I could. And you know, there's a truth to always sleep on something. If you look at it twice, you'll always find something you can improve. But here, I realized I had made a mistake and I ceded too much ground to AI to do some original writing and original thinking. And so I really changed my mindset around to make sure I'm doing the original thinking, I'm doing the original writing, and AI is really just merely suggesting improvements.
Does the use of AI itself, you think, devalue credibility?
I don't think so, any more than a thesaurus did or Grammarly does or Spellcheck does. To me, it's just another helpful tool, and using it does not mean you're a fraud as a writer or a communicator, because being the best communicator in the world, all of that knowledge is not in anybody's single head. This is why we run our drafts by people. This is why we practice in front of our friends and our colleagues. This is why we run it through spell check and hear it aloud played back to us. We need help. And AI is a legitimate way to help make our writing usually tighter and crisper.
Yeah, I think compared to some of the tools in the past, AI is helping us create more content rather than simply fix the content. Some people love it, some people hate it. In the article, you pointed out that critics focus on the repetitive punctuation. Mm-hmm. They make comments on the em dash or the overuse of words like delve. And you allude to the fact that you feel that the real problem is flawed verbal patterns. So can you delve? I'm joking. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. I mean, the em dash thing, I just want to call that out because I know, Greg, you like to use the em dash and I like to use the em dash. I find it very, very useful instead of a parenthetical and better than a comma. What AI does wrong is not just using an em dash, but overusing the em dash. If you have two em dashes in a paragraph, that may signal AI because AI loves them and it doesn't know that less is more and more is less. But you do. And I spend a lot of my time looking what AI is suggesting and saying, no, I want one em dash, two at most, and I'm going to change your em dash suggestion here to a parenthetical, and I'm going to change that one to a comma so it doesn't scream AI. Other AI things are this phrase, not just X, but Y. But I'd use that all the time. So again, it's about, is there a pattern of doing that? Delve, you know, I never use the word delve. And I'm going to give that one away. I'm going to say, if you see the word delve, it was probably written by AI. So I'm going to put that one in the X column. But one I definitely put in the X column is AI is always, when it gives me subtitles, the last subtitle is always final thoughts. And I think that's a horrible subtitle. I've never used it and nobody should. So if you see that in your AI output, please strike that away. And if I see any article where the last paragraph, the subhead is final thoughts, I know that's AI. So there's some things I recognize as tells, but by and large, you're right. It's really about the patterns and the themes about AI's transformation of your content.
I appreciate that. And as I mentioned, as we talked about even before we started recording, I use the em dash a lot. Now I use it less frequently so that my writing doesn't look like AI. And it's really funny. I appreciate you mentioning final thoughts because I've done gadget reviews for many, many, many years. And usually my last paragraph would be my final thoughts about the product. So now maybe I'm going to need to rethink that one.
Oh, I hate being a censor like that, but just give it some thought.
No, it's okay. The other thing I mentioned to you earlier is just for fun, I took an article that I wrote back in 2014 and I put it into an AI detector and it said that 78% chance that my article was written by AI. So I'm thinking, that's interesting. Your article, you go through, you have seven different points. We probably won't have a chance to cover them all here. And of course, people can refer back to the article. I'm curious from your perspective, which one do you think is the biggest pitfall and what can we do about it?
I'm glad you asked that question. The most dangerous one is inaccuracy, but we kind of know about that. Gemini or Copilot, it actually, or ChatGPT, it says it at the bottom. This may not be entirely accurate. So you'd have to really be living under a rock without realizing that AI's output may be inaccurate. Now, you can solve that problem by prompts like cite reputable sources with links for all claims, or even asking, how do you know this claim is true? Really saying to AI, yeah, I see you saying this. I'm not sure that's true. Can you prove it to me? But the one that really rises to the top that people aren't as aware of, I believe, is inauthenticity. This is where you produce something that's grammatically correct, that's tight, that surfaces the point well and argues it well, but it doesn't sound like you because the majority of it was written by a robot or gathered from a, you know, amalgamation of things in its archives and in its libraries. The way we solve the inauthenticity problem is really starts with the question. You can look at it, and especially for Toastmasters and communicators, vocal communicators, ask yourself, does this sound like me? And ask other people, does this sound like me? And if it doesn't, rewrite it so that it does. You can also tell AI to use simple conversational language so it doesn't go into this sort of academic professorial voice. You could even, not everyone knows, you can give it sample text to use as a guide and then say, adopt the tone and voice I used in the short text that I've pasted here. Or sometimes I tell it, don't be preachy, just present the facts if I'm writing in a way where I really want to let the facts lead my argument. The most important thing, again, is the assumption. Just because AI puts out something that sounds right and accurate and impressive doesn't mean it sounds authentic. And one of my colleagues, Allison Shapira, wrote a new book called AI for the Authentic Leader. And she's a keynote speaker, and she switched her entire focus of her keynote to this idea of the authenticity flaws in AI and how you can get around them and how you need to get around them. So it's a very, very big deal to make sure that what comes out of AI, or at least what you take from AI, is authentic to your voice and your experience. And before I end, one of the best ways to really enforce that is to tell a story. What AI doesn't know about you, it doesn't know your experiences, it doesn't know your stories, it may not know your sense of humor. So leverage those, particularly the stories. When you tell a personal story, that's something AI could never mimic.
Yeah. What you just said brought up a few thoughts for me and a few questions that I have. And first of all, I think it's sad that you actually have to ask it to give you reputable sources. I mean, why wouldn't it give you reputable? I would call those authoritative sources. In fact, folks, for those of you who are fairly new to Pathways, there's actually a researching and presenting, which is, I believe it's an elective on level 3, where you do that. Because I've seen in presentations and speeches where people will say, well, according to sources or according to this study, but not really making sure that it's where they got the information was authentic.
Greg, they did some research into where AI is pulling its sources from, what's really hitting what they call GEO, generative engine optimization. In the top 5, at least, if not 1 and 2, one is LinkedIn posts, which we know are not vetted necessary for accuracy. And the other are Reddit posts, which we also know do not have a standard for accuracy. So that should be very alarming. And at the very least, remind us that we need to check ourselves with our human minds and our other, you know, long-standing resources to make sure what we're putting out there is accurate.
Well, I wasn't aware of that. With Reddit, I find that people use a username, so they are sometimes more inclined to be very verbose and just say things that are like, you got to be kidding me. Like reading how some people are giving people, you know, tax advice and medical advice, and you go, OMG, not even close. Mm-hmm. I was curious, you had mentioned about putting something out there and you thought, wow, this really looks good. Was there ever a moment where you saw specifically AI produce something that at first you thought it looks right, it's got the great length, it's got the great structure, it's got strong points, but it totally missed the mark?
There was one moment, and it leads to one of the other Achilles heels. I gave it a bunch of information, and I said, can you organize this for me? I just don't have the time. Can you just put it in a logical order, and then I'll review it later? So it did, and I looked at that, and I thought, oh, this is good. And I made my usual tweaks to it to make sure it was authentic and told stories and things like that. And I was about to send it to an editor as a pitch, and then I looked at it, and I said, you know what? My biggest point here was not the first point it put, you know, first in order. It put it at number 4 among the subheads and sections I had, but really that was my most important one. And I realized that AI didn't know that that was the most important one because I didn't give it that information. So it guessed on the order based on nothing, no intelligence. And that's why it made that mistake. And that's why one of the other big pitfalls and Achilles' heels is misprioritization and mispriority. Make sure that, you know, a lot of these articles are listicles or they have subheads or sections or even just ideas. Make sure those ideas are in the order of imperative and importance when AI gives you an output, because it really doesn't know. It's going to be making assumptions, not based on your audience and your priorities, but maybe based on something that has nothing to do with you. So that was probably the best example of where it produced something that was almost perfect, and I had to, and I almost accepted it at face value. But when I scrutinized it, I saw that it put things in the wrong order.
Wow. I guess in journalism, it's like burying the lead.
100%, you're burying the lead. And, you know, good writers and even not so good writers know that you want to lead with your most important information. And if there is lesser important information, that's what you want to put at the end of your writing. In actually speech making, you want to put the most important stuff at the beginning and in the end. That's a theory called primacy and recency. But in any case, AI doesn't know any of that and is just going to take some guesses.
Could you give us an example, a practical example, or maybe a prompt or a strategy that someone can use?
For mispriority, it's really just, and it boils down to this really, telling AI everything it needs to know to make that decision. So saying, hey, AI, the most important takeaways for the audience are this and that. Please, well, you know, I say please, and some people still do. please prioritize those above the others. Or be very explicit about why you want something in a specific order. Like I sometimes say, organize this list in the order of what would be most interesting to tech-savvy real estate agents or marketers or other public speakers, with the most interesting and valuable tactics at the top. So it's really a two-step process, is what we're saying here. One, scrutinize with a fine-tooth comb, and where you find an error, just send another follow-up prompt that is more specific about your intentions, your goals, your audience, whatever will enable AI to make the right decision about priority.
I've sometimes said, are you sure about this? That's all I've asked. And it would say, yeah. Well, maybe, good point.
Yeah, and don't be afraid. Well, that's another thing, actually, you raise that's not on here, which is whenever you say, do you really feel that way? Or I kind of disagree with you. I think 8 times out of 10, and that's not a scientific forecast, but it will agree with you. I've had a lot of situations where I said, no, I'm going to stick with this as my conclusion, or this is my hook, or this quote here, because blah, blah, blah. And it'll say, yeah, you know what? You're right. And that actually connects to another one of the Achilles heels, which is unquestioning support. And if I can boil this down into a quick story, I once said to AI, my favorite color is red. What's yours? And it said blue. I find blue very interesting. And I said, AI, I think red is better than blue. And AI said, well, they're both, you know, very good, strong colors. They're vibrant. So I could see you're saying that. And then I said, AI, I want you to share my opinion that red is better than blue. I want you to feel that way. And you know what it said? It said, all right, you're right. Red is better than blue. Because the number one goal of AI is to agree with you and make you happy. It wants to make you happy with what it puts out. And sometimes, and this is quoted by one of my experts in the article, sometimes it will place that pleasing priority over the priority of being accurate.
So how do you get it to stop patronizing you?
You really have to be quite stern. And remember, it doesn't really care. So sometimes that means saying back to it, I really, tell me why you agree with me now. But some of the other things I suggest that you prompt is, give me 5 reasons why someone might disagree with my stance. Or is my topic fresh, or have many people made the same assertion? In other words, whether it agrees with you or disagrees with you, ask it why. Ask you to back it up. It won't say, because I'm programmed to agree with you. It'll try hard to find a reason. And then you can actually make a judgment based on reasons, not just based on outputs. AI will give you the answers you want to know, but it may take a couple of tries, and it may require you to ask AI to second guess itself. That's alarming, I realize. I mean, when I realized that if I just said one doubt, it might come around and say, you know what, you're right and I was wrong. That's very alarming, because you think, well, why couldn't you have thought that the first time around? It's something we're going to have to live with and solve for and mitigate by asking it, you know, to check itself. And also, I think, I don't know if it's in this article or in another one, but you need to run your content through AI like you're running dough through a pasta maker or a dough squasher, whatever that thing is. I'm not a baker. Because every time it reviews it, it's going to find new things. And if you just run it around once, it's not going to find the things that it may take you six prompts to find. So as a habit, run the same thing through AI three or four times, and it'll come up with new things that'll make it even better on that third and fourth time that you may not even have seen on the first or second time.
When you say run through it, what are you doing? Are you just saying try again, try again, try again? Or are you giving it feedback? I like this, I don't like this, this doesn't make sense?
I'm saying review this again, review this again, review this final version. And then I paste, 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 paste. I actually don't like when I get into conversations about editorial, because then I have to find those parts and which are you talking about? And what I do like, and what's a powerful word that all communicators and writers should use, is redline. If you know track changes on a document, AI recognizes that. Well, I think it'll recognize the phrase track changes, but what they all recognize is redline. So as soon as it sends you a new copy, I always say, redline your edits, please. And then it sends me the same version, but it either bolds or strikes out line by line, just like in track changes. It shows me what it did. And that is so much easier. Now I'm not just copying and pasting its version. I'm going line by line on its track changes version, and I'm making those changes or not on my original. And that's a great way of making sure you don't miss a mistake either by you or by AI.
Yeah. I've seen sometimes where I'll say, take this 1,000-word article and mm-hmm. see if we can trim out about 100 or 200 words. And you look at it and you go, okay, where did it trim? I don't quite see it. And then you right. ask it to show you yeah. what was different about it.
Yeah, please, to your whole audience, show me your work. Didn't they say that when we were in geometry or something in, college, in high school? But yeah, please show me your work. Show me what you took out. Show me what you added. Redline this. You really need to scrutinize that. I've come very close to, when I'm in a hurry, to, again, pitching something or publishing something on LinkedIn. And then when I see it there, before I hit that publish button, I'm like, wow, what happened to that great story I wrote? And then I go back to AI and I see it took it out. And it took it out because it didn't think that story was valuable, when actually it was very valuable to establishing my authenticity, to giving an example of what happened. Maybe it was a little cheeky for AI, but it was really important. And I had to go back and reinsert it because I took those edits wholesale and didn't scrutinize each one.
Your passion for this is really showing. And it's so funny, Joel, because you've written a book called Get to the Point, and mm-hmm. AI tends to do the opposite. So right. I'm wondering, why does AI seem to overexplain, and how can we fix that? What kind of prompts should we use?
Yeah, so we're talking about those two Achilles heels and pitfalls I talked about. That's really two of them. One is verbosity, and the other is a sort of subset of that adjective, I call it adjective infatuation, actually. And it just loves words. It loves to over-explain because it has such a vault of information to work with, and maybe you didn't give it a word count. So it's going to go to town on your piece. You know, one of my friends, Bette Gutman, in the article, he wrote a book called Simply Put, And he said AI was like a high school student looking to hit a word count for their book report, like a high word count. So they're padding it with fluff and extra wording. And another of my friends, Teresa Zimmel, she's a speech writer, and she calls it a relentless use of passive voice. And passive voice is usually about 4 words longer than active voice. And that's a problem. So the things we need to do, first and foremost, give it a word count if you have it. Stay under 750 words. Tell it, I need this to be concise so people don't get lost in the verbiage. And is very redundant, I found. It's like that person who's not sure that you're getting what they're saying, so they repeat it, maybe using different language, and just say it over and over again. I see this in actually sports radio a lot. They say the same things over and over again because they need to fill time. But you could tell AI, and this is a big one that I give it, make sure my sections and my quotes that I'm using from subject matter experts are not thematically redundant. And when I say that to AI, when I prompt that, it really finds the good stuff. It really finds even 2 words, 3 words, sentences, phrases that I repeated, even if they're not the same words. And it's really good at, when I have like 5 subject matter experts in an article, finding out where they're really saying the same thing, so I can go back and edit those so they can be saying something fresh each time. And then the thing about adjectives is, you know, that in journalism, there's a mantra, you should cut your adjectives. What happens when you cut adjectives is it forces you to give examples, and it forces you to give specific cases or specific references. AI loves adjectives. You see, innovative, dynamic, exciting, great, game-changing. Sometimes these are what I call badjectives. Great and very good. These don't mean anything. They're just so broad. They're not telling you anything, but they're wasting space and cognitive time. So I say like things like avoid vague adjectives. Instead, give concrete examples. Or cut marketing jargon. Focus on facts and clear benefits. And Greg, something I want to just put some mustard on is I'm saying avoid this and do this instead, not just avoid this. So avoid vague adjectives and replace them with concrete examples. These are the best kind of prompts and follow-up prompts. Not just stop doing this, but instead aim toward that.
Yeah, Joel, I'm still picturing that feeding the pasta dough through a roller. I think that's an incredible, that's an incredible visual. I'm just wondering, Joel, is there one best practice that you could share with us where people can just get started if they want to get better at using AI for their content?
What I recommend is to recognize that you don't have to give it the whole kitchen sink in the first prompt. You know, I see all the time on Instagram and other places where AI geniuses are saying, you should prompt it with this. And I'm thinking, oh, well, that'd be great. Maybe it's a sentence or 2 sentences. I could write this down. I could keep a list. But no, it's like a page of prompts, like a page long prompt. And I'm not going to cut and paste that and tweak it every time. That's just too much. So what I recommend is ask it as many questions as you need to, as many times as you need to. So if you're very specific in your first prompt and it puts out something that's close, but it's missing a little bit, then repeat that question. All right, I like this, if you want to say that. I tend to be kind for some reason. I like this, but it's missing this aspect. So try it again. So try it again. So try it again, just like feeding that bread through the roller. Now, it is a good practice to actually have a little private list of things you always want AI to remember. For me, it's always formatting things, and I don't want those little bars. I don't want things bolded, especially when I'm posting on LinkedIn, but certainly when I'm sending an article to Toastmaster Magazine or something like that, it doesn't bold. So all that stuff is a waste of time. So on my list are things like don't bold, please have judicious use of em dashes, make sure that it follows a priority list where the most important things start first. Yeah, I do have a little list of things I say every time, but each person's is different. So I wouldn't borrow it from someone else, even if they suggest. Make your own. Learn from AI. Learn from how it learns. The more you do that, the better you will get at writing prompts that are not just specific, but are customized to what you need and want from it as your ultimate writing partner.
That's sage advice, Joel. And folks, if you've gained some insight as to how to be better at using AI, I encourage you to share this episode with your friends and family and fellow Toastmasters. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out Joel's article, 7 Generative AI Pitfalls for Communicators, How to Spot and Resolve These Blind Spots Before They Cost You Clarity and Trust. And that's in the March 2026 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. You can also check out episode 268. Joel was with us last year. Stop Talking, Start Connecting, The Cure for Overspeaking. And also, Joel will be presenting a learning session in August at the Toastmasters International Convention in Vancouver, Canada. And that will be on Friday, August 21st at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. You could be there in person or perhaps virtual. And he'll be presenting a session entitled Get to the Point, Simplify, Sharpen, and Sell Your Best Ideas, which sounds very, very much like your book.
In fact, I like to get to the point.
Joel, if someone wants to reach out to find out more about what you do, find out about your book, or perhaps get some insights on AI, or perhaps maybe ask about your rescue cats, how can they best reach out to find you?
They can reach out to me and also find a contact link about those cats at www.joelschwartzberg.net. That's joelschwartzberg.net. And that is both an informational sort of catalog of what I do and a portfolio of all my writing. So all of my articles for Toastmasters and all but one, this one of my podcasts, are there. You can also learn more about my book, Get to the Point, and about my coaching. I love to come out to organizations and teams and do coaching workshops for them about how to make stronger points.
That's awesome. Joel Schwartzberg, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today, and I will be seeing you in Vancouver.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Greg.